This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 1st of May 2026. Hello and welcome to Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 1st of May. Your readers today are Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
Jane Harding.
Hello.
And we will later be joined by Carolyn Huan. And I'm your presenter, Steve Russell. The main headlines this week are: ugly solar farm fears over plans, thousands gather for St George's Day Scout Parade, and Pedal Power has artists' work sewn up. So now, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
And that is ugly solar farm fears over plans. A 12-hectare site proposed. A proposed solar farm could power thousands of homes, but not everyone is convinced it's the right solution. Plans for more than 12 hectares of land near Weston Court Farm on Bishop Sutton Road, on the outskirts of Alresford, have drawn concerns about the impact on the rural landscape, the wildlife, and the views for nearby residents. Lib Dem councillor Margot Power, who represents New Alresford, said, "I have a few worries on this, mainly on the screening and the environmental impact. There will be impact on the views. The proposals rely heavily on the screening of the existing trees, but there are no existing trees in the hedgerow going towards the road." She acknowledged that new trees might be planted to help reduce the visual impact of the solar farm, but questioned whether this would be enough. The proposals submitted by ILOS New Energy UK would see the land used for renewable energy generation, with solar panels installed along with associated infrastructure, landscaping and access. According to the application, the solar farm would generate enough electricity to power around 2,400 average homes and could help lower carbon emissions by an estimated 1,932 tonnes per year. ILOS and New Energy UK has said, "The product would deliver substantial biodiversity enhancements and include considerable additional planting associated with both landscaping and biodiversity enhancement." Despite the company's assurance, the plans have sparked mixed reactions, with 3 out of 4 comments posted on the Winchester City Council planning portal objecting to the scheme. Kerry Coleman, who lives on the Bishop Sutton Road, wrote, "The proposed site is in a south-facing elevated field, which is visible coming in and out of Alresford. Normally, these ugly solar farms are situated on flat ground, which makes them easier to screen. The farm will have significant negative impact on the local residents, looking at unsightly panels and any glare from their properties. However, not everyone is against the idea." Peter Waldron, who lives on Prospect Road, wrote in support, "Good plan for the local area, excellent use of the land, and to help the local power infrastructure. It seems that there is sensible landscape management employed and a practical route to grid. Local rates will benefit the council, local construction should benefit, combined with educational visits, habitat improvement, and perhaps even some community benefit would be welcomed." In planning documents, the company described the solar farm as temporary and reversible and fitting within the principles of sustainable planning. The application also highlights the project's potential to help reduce reliance on fossil fuels and provide backup in power during periods of high demand. "This is not a first time a solar farm has been proposed at Weston Court Farm. An existing facility already operates on land south of Bishop Sutton Road near the Sun Lane housing development and Alresford Bypass. The new plans previously attracted criticism from Alresford residents when ILOS asked Winchester City Council whether an environmental impact assessment would be needed. the council decided it was not necessary. Jan Field, chair of the Alresford Society, said, "Solar power is important, but this proposed development is very small. It may also portend future expansion to the east, changing the character and biodiversity of the whole area." The application reference can be viewed on the Winchester City Council's website, and ILOS has been contacted for comment. This shows a picture of the proposed site with a clear map of where it will be, and a huge sheet photograph of potential solar panels on a slope.
Thousands gather for St George's Day Scout Parade. Scouts from across Winchester came together in the sun to participate in the annual St George's Day Parade. The event took place on Sunday, April 26th, where St George's Day celebrations were in full swing in Winchester city centre. The parade started at 3 p.m. from Colebrook Street car park, with scouting groups marching towards the cathedral for a special service. The parading groups involved were the squirrels, beavers, cubs, scouts and explorers, as well as the local girl guides from across Winchester, who joined together in celebrating the day. There were young people involved as young as 4 years old, alongside teenagers, the explorers and network scouts over the age of 18. St George's Day is a significant day in scouting, as St George is the patron saint of scouts worldwide. Scouts use this day to reflect on the scout promise and law, often renewing their commitment. As the parading scout groups entered Winchester Cathedral, thousands of spectators and proud parents lined the streets and the fields outside the cathedral gates. At the back of the parade was the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Ahwal, who gave a short speech at the cathedral service. The event featured around 900 scouts, beavers and cubs marching through the city centre, with thousands more watching on. And there's a lovely picture of a whole load of scouts, mostly looking like female scouts. Anyway, a whole row of scouts with other scouts behind them holding their banners. Very colourful.
Pedal Power has artist work sewn up. An artist has found an unusual way to power his sewing machine by getting strangers to cycle on a bike. Harriet Riddle gets passers-by to hop on a specially made bike which transfers energy to her sewing machine. The 35-year-old mum of two can stitch portraits while cyclists power her sewing machine. She stitches freehand and also creates amazing artworks of iconic locations like the historic Winchester Cathedral. One of the vergers from the cathedral hopped on the bike when she was making the North Tower. Ms. Riddle from Oxfordshire started out doing people's portraits at Greenwich Market in London before she saved up enough money to travel to India. "I travelled all around India doing scenes there on the streets," she said. Ms. Riddle had the bike specially made 10 years ago, and she's been making scenes powered by strangers ever since. She got the idea for the bike to power her machine while working as a craft maker in the green craft fields at Glastonbury. Miss Riddle said, "I had travelled around the world with my machine. Initially, I looked for a plug socket, which landed me in cafes and bookies in the UK. I was getting fed up with the batteries always dying, and in Glastonbury, I was working in the green field. I was running around with the batteries. So then I thought, why don't I get people to pedal the bike? That was really effective and successful. Then I would travel and do landscapes because I can put all my kit on the trailer on the back of a bike." Miss Riddle met her partner at Glastonbury, and she has two children who are 4 years old and 6 months old. She said, "Since having children, it's been harder to do my thing at Glastonbury. I still go. I have a beautiful wagon, a showman's wagon, which I take to Glastonbury." Miss Riddle's full-time job has always been making scenes with her sewing machine, and she does so under the business name In Stitch You. She said, "I stitch events, weddings, I roll up and stitch what I see." When Miss Riddle came to Winchester to capture its iconic cathedral, the deputy head verger, Dickon Kelly, helped power the machine. "You can feel the resistance go up when you power," he said of the experience. Miss Riddle said that the machine will never stitch too fast if someone pedals very quickly, but it will stop if they're too slow. If they pedal too slow, the whole machine stops, and then I tell them to pedal faster. I need more power, and then they pick up the speed and look at me begrudgingly, she said. It's amazing. You really tell the difference between someone who cycles often and someone who doesn't. Kids can join in too from a certain height, although she has to put blocks on the pedals. She said, I really need to get a kid bike because they love it if they can reach the pedals. Miss Riddle posts videos of his stitching online.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment and Belgarum, and then three articles from various columnists. Right, the death notices today. Lyon, John Frederick, 9th of April, age 94. Lyon Shirley Anne, née Risley, passed away peacefully, age 91, on the 1st of February. John Whedon, 7th of April, age 90. May Nicholson, passed away 8th of April, age 91. Oliver Reginald Edward, passed away peacefully, age 95, on the 22nd of April. Kenneth Robin Chant, passed away 12th of April, age 66. Fraser, Jill Margaret, née Harvey, passed away on the 13th of April. Pooley Peter, CMG, died 15th of April, age 89. Sherwood, Irene Sherwood, passed away on the 7th of April, age 87. Reginald Ernest Grace, passed away 6th of April, age 95. And Adams, Audrey Adams, on the 16th of April, aged 93. We now continue with letters to the editor.
And here we have a letter from Andrew McMurtry, BBC Show. The BBC documentary on the New Forest National Park is a wonderful picture of our local natural environment gem. The first in the series, Inside Britain's National Parks, it simultaneously captures the magical atmosphere of the forest and the important part it plays in the community of Hampshire. Filmed through the seasons and at different times of day, this peacefully paced documentary captures the timelessness of the ponies grazing the heathland and the sensitive management of nature to encourage biodiversity. The partnership between commoners, verderers and rangers is inspiring, all communicating their love for the forest and their desire for it to continue to flourish in future generations. The pigs delight in their annual panage, rooting out acorns. The presentment of a young commoner to the verderer's court in Lyndhurst is a moving picture of this desire for continuity. The programme is available on iPlayer and I heartily recommend it. And that was from Andrew McMurtry, Hyde, Winchester.
And David Tipper says, New King's Walk, no. I'm writing to formally express my strong opposition to the current transformation plans for King's Walk. While the proposal aims to modernise the area, it risks dismantling a vital community hub that serves a unique and irreplaceable role in Winchester's city centre. King's Walk is far more than just a thoroughfare. It's a sanctuary for independent businesses and creative start-ups that cannot afford the high rents of the high street. By shifting the focus toward a more polished and commercialised aesthetic, we risk displacing the very entrepreneurs who provide Winchester with its distinct character. The accessible nature of King's Walk is its greatest strength, offering a vital entry point for local talent to thrive. Furthermore, the existing layout provides a sheltered and pedestrian-friendly environment that fosters social interaction. Replacing this established ecosystem with a new vision may result in a sterile place that lacks the organic community spirit currently present. Instead of a total transformation, the council should focus on sensitive refurbishments, such as improved lighting, cleaning, and better signage to enhance the area without destroying its soul. We need King's Walk to remain an affordable and authentic place. I urge the council to reconsider these plans and instead invest in the current tenants and infrastructure that make this location a hidden gem. We should be protecting our independent quarters rather than seeking to over-sanitise them. And that's from David Tipper, Drayton Street, Winchester.
This is from Shalina Casey, Welcome at Alpha. I didn't expect much when I walked into my first Alpha evening in New Alsford. If anything, I felt unsure. Like many people, my understanding of church and God came with questions, doubts, and a quiet hesitation about whether I would even fit in. But what I found completely changed that. The course was hosted by Rosie Waring Green and her husband Ian, who opened their home every Monday night with a warmth that instantly put everyone at ease. From the moment you step inside, it doesn't feel like a formal gathering. It feels like a second home. Alpha itself is unlike anything I imagined. It isn't about being told what to believe. It's a space to explore faith openly, whether you believe in God, aren't sure, or don't believe at all. Each week, people from all walks of life come together to share thoughts, ask questions, and have honest conversations without fear of judgment. What makes it so powerful is the freedom to simply be yourself. There's no pressure, no expectations, just genuine discussion and connection. For many of us, especially those new to church, that first step can feel daunting. But those fears quickly disappear. Rosie and Ian, who are deeply involved in the community and churches such as St. John's and All Saints Byton, have created something truly special. It's more than a course, it's a place where people feel seen, supported, and welcomed. Alpha isn't just about faith, it's about connection, purpose, and finding a sense of belonging. If you've ever felt uncertain, alone, or simply curious, I'd encourage you to try it. You might be surprised by what you find. To find out more, contact Rosie at St. John's Church, New Alsford. Email rosie at 22rwg.co.uk. And that was from Shalina Casey, Grange Road, New Alsford.
And Simon Lever writes, logistics plan. There is a unified objection regarding plans for a logistics park that would invade 200 hectares of land between Winchester and Basingstoke, Chronicle April the 23rd. Residents are most certainly against such a development, which seemingly has not been thought through by the development company. As a champion of cooperation between the council's two main political parties, this is an opportunity for supporting residents. Both Councillor Jackie Porter, Liberal Democrat, and Councillor Caroline Horrell, Conservative, object to what would seem to be an ill-thought-out plan sharing the same concerns. I strongly suggest that both parties stand up together in an overt and visible manner, delivering shared unity, thus addressing residents' concerns. There is strength in unity. And that was from a regular letter writer, Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And this is from Stephen Percy about a power grab. What do populist parties tend to do when they actually gain power? Recent experience in Poland, Hungary and America might give us a few clues. Typically, they tend to corrupt the judicial system, control the media, subvert the electoral process, criminally target their political opponents, politicise the civil service, pack government agencies with cronies, persecute minorities and lie constantly. Oh, and corruptly feather their own and their mates' nests. In the UK, we are often far too complacent about such risks. We should not forget the proroguing of Parliament, Partygate, PPE scandals, and cynical measures to rig the voting rules at elections. That's from Stephen Percy, Eastern Winchester.
Nicholas Giles writes, careful with doors. Recently, a friend lost the tip of her right index finger when a kiosk door closed in a violent and uncontrolled way. Such accidents are not uncommon with children and older people, particularly at risk. Considerable strength is required to open the door, presumably compressing a spring, and when the door is released, a damping mechanism should control the speed of closure. Improperly installed or maintained doors are very dangerous, as the doors are very heavy and a tight fit in the frame. Repurposing kiosks as libraries, etc., makes good use of these familiar icons, but it does incur maintenance and risk. That's from Nicholas Giles, Kitwood Lane, Ropley.
And Eileen Berry writes, praise for Mayor. I cannot believe how wonderful it has been to be transported to dance troupes representing different parts of India. The magic of movement and colour, exceptional instrumental music, was world class. Having been interested all my life in music of all kinds, the Indian performance was exceptional. Also, an evening of dance and music, instrumental, operatic, performed from a group of Ukrainians, talent above and beyond. As if that wasn't enough, a classical evening performed with violin and cello in Abbey House, followed by an evening of entertainment with a young lady singing in her native language, French. Quite appealing. Who do we thank for all this wonderful travel around the world in music and dance? The current mayor, Sudhakar Ashwal. Forgive me for emphasising that this current mayor has been incredibly inclusive and committed, accepting every invitation that he possibly could, along with the mayoress. The very last thing that I have supported was Friday, when the organist who used to perform in the cathedral for 20 years and has now departed from that position gave his absolute all. I have to bow to his superior presentation of Mozart, Bach and Williams, to say the least, and he also introduced a young student to play about three pieces. Believe me, that young 15-year-old has potential, and he should be nurtured because he too was exceptional. This is only a fraction of what Sudhakar Ashwal has achieved for his chosen charities. I cannot thank him enough, with many, many, many other people who have voiced the same opinion. And that was from a former mayor, Eileen Berry, Prizedean Road, Hairstock.
And this is from Derek Beck, choir performance he writes about. For over 100 years, amateur, largely unauditioned choirs have been combining to sing large-scale classical programmes with orchestras and professional soloists in the county. Formerly, the Winchester and County Music Festival, now called the Hampshire Choral Festival, HCF, seven such choirs will deliver two separate concerts, recreating the pattern used annually until COVID. Following two successful recent excursions by the whole cohort to Basingstoke's Anvil, this year's performers will convene in Thorndon Hall on May the 9th and in Romsey Abbey on May the 16th. The former will feature over 100 singers in Rossini's famous Petite Messe Solennelle, neither small nor solemn, whilst the abbey will resound to around 150 voices for Haydn's Nelson Mass and Dürufel's C20 Requiem. I don't think I pronounced that correctly, never mind. The conductors will be David Burgess and Graham Kidd, and both performances will commence at 7:30 p.m. For further details, see hcfonline.org.uk. And for tickets, thorndonhall.co.uk and ticketsource.co.uk/music in Romsey. And that's from Derek Beck, Chairman of the Hampshire County Choral Festival, Firefields Road, Winchester.
Andy Dobson writes, Cart and Horses. Nearly two decades ago, a handful of accidents over several years were recorded at the Cart and Horses Junction on the A33. That modest record failed to stop a determined campaign for something to be done, culminating in the 2016 redesign. The result, a central reservation, has introduced a dangerous blind spot with right-turning vehicles obscuring the view for those attempting to cross or join the main road. Predictably, accidents have increased, with two recent incidents in quick succession. Further modifications and signage have been the equivalent of lipstick on a pig. Before forming circles and singing Kumbaya in pursuit of yet more costly changes, perhaps we should remember who championed the last solution and the consequences it has brought. Let's hope that something must be done can be used to reverse the plans to close Andover Road and routing traffic through a 20 miles per hour housing estate. That's from Andy Dobson, Fraser Road, Kingsworthy.
And now we move on to Chronicle Comment.
And here we have the challenge of going green. Solar power is one of the great necessities of our age. If the UK is to meet its climate targets, cut carbon emissions and reduce its reliance on fossil fuels, we must generate more renewable energy. Solar farms play a vital role in that effort. Clean, quiet and increasingly efficient, they can produce electricity for thousands of homes. Against that backdrop, it is easy to see why proposals such as the solar farm near Western Court Farm are put forward. The scheme promises enough power for around 2,400 homes and significant carbon savings. Developers point to biodiversity gains, new planting, and the fact that solar farms are, in theory, temporary and reversible. Yet the unease felt by many should not be dismissed as knee-jerk opposition. Farmers, campaigners, and communities are grappling with difficult questions. How much of our precious countryside should be given over to the energy generation rather than food production? Farmers are being offered significant long-term incomes for hosting solar panels. For some, that financial security is attractive. Others argue just as strongly that once productive farmland is lost, it may never truly be regained. There is also the question of landscape. Hampshire's rolling fields and open views are not an abstract ideal. They're part of what makes places like Alsford special. Solar farms are not the enemy, but nor should they be waved through without careful thought. The challenge is balance, prioritising rooftops, brownfield land and less sensitive sites, while protecting our best agricultural land and cherished views.
LGR risks missed opportunity. That's from Nick Adams King, Hampshire County Council leader. Local government reorganisation in Hampshire should have been an opportunity, a once-in-a-generation chance to design councils that are stronger, more resilient and better aligned with the communities they serve. Instead, what is emerging risks becoming a missed opportunity, driven more by arbitrary boundaries and political advantage than by what works for residents. The most immediate concern I hear, time and again, is from communities caught up in the proposed boundary changes. Areas with long-standing rural or semi-rural identities are being asked to align themselves with significantly more urban authorities. For many residents, this is not a technical adjustment, it is a fundamental shift in how their communities are represented and understood. There is a clear sense of unease. People are rightly asking whether their voices will be heard in much larger or more urban-focused councils, where priorities are inevitably different. Issues such as rural transport, countryside management, smaller schools, and dispersed populations risk being overshadowed by the demands of dense urban centres. That concern is not abstract. It goes to the heart of local democracy and whether people feel connected to those making decisions on their behalf. At the same time, the consequences for the areas left behind are just as serious, if not more so. The proposed Mid-Hampshire configuration raises profound questions about long-term sustainability. Strip away key commercial centres and employment hubs, and you remove not just economic activity, but the business rates that underpin local services. What remains is a council covering a very large geographic area with a predominantly older population, extensive rural road networks, many small schools, and significant environmental constraints, including two national parks. These are all important and valued characteristics, but they come with a cost, with cost pressures and limited opportunities for growth. That combination is deeply challenging. A smaller tax base, rising demand for services such as adult social care, and fewer opportunities to generate income, create a structural imbalance that will be difficult to resolve. That is why I believe the current proposals fall short. And that is Nick Adams King, Hampshire County Council leader.
Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. Spray painted markings. Hampshire County Council has explained why various spray painted markings have appeared on pavements in Winchester. On Wednesday, April the 22nd, spray painted marks in red, white and blue appeared on the pavements on Upper Brook Street, Silver Hill and Middlebrook Street. The majority of markings are on the crossing between the Brooks Shopping Centre and Cook, Winchester. Other markings have been placed along the pavement near the bus stops towards Sainsbury's. The council confirmed the markings are normally associated with utility works and are used to identify where cables run underground. A spokesperson said, "This usually happens sometime before utility companies seek permission to carry out works, and as such, we have not yet received details of any required works in this area."
And here we have a grief counsellor talks about end-of-life rituals. And it's written by Ali Hickson, who is the grief counsellor and director at Richard Steele and Partners in Winchester. Richard Steele, of course, runs funerals. "How many times have you heard or maybe said variations on the following? Oh, just stick me in a cardboard box. I don't need any fuss." This is often said because we don't want to be any bother or incur a cost or upset our family when we die. However, there are a few things we need to seriously consider about our own end-of-life plans, as they can have a major impact on the ability of our loved ones to cope after our passing. Grief counsellors regularly see the impact of grief when a meaningful goodbye has not been held. This was significant during the pandemic, and for many it meant a prolonged period of grief as restrictions at the time prevented friends and family from coming together to say goodbye. Also, if not arranged at the time, few families will retrospectively hold any sort of celebration of life as time has passed. In these cases, we see the pain of loss become more difficult to cope with when no ritual has been held. A common misconception is that funerals are distressing. It is not the funeral that is distressing, it is the death of the loved one that is distressing. We cannot cushion this for our loved ones, but we can ensure that they have people around them to comfort and support them as they begin the process of grieving and adjusting to life without you. A celebration of life or funeral provides psychological closure. Rituals help the brain process the new normal of a loved one's absence. Ritualistic acts restore a sense of agency and control during a time when things feel out of control. Communal support. A celebration of life or a funeral service creates a shared language of mourning. They bring people together to offer unconditional support and reinforce the support available to bereaved family and friends. Honouring legacy. Rituals preserve the memory of the deceased, whether through formal eulogies or informal storytelling. They allow survivors to acknowledge the impact the person had on their lives. You can have whatever you wish and to whatever budget, but don't leave your loved ones unsupported and without an opportunity to remember you to allow their grief to start well. You matter, and their grief matters.
George Hayter asks, do we still need the ballot box? Any voter hurrying to polling station next Thursday might ask themselves why they have to make the journey. Few will question the need to vote. The importance of participating in democracy is pretty widely understood. But what voters may question is the need to go to a polling station. Computers and mobile phones mean the government could now make it possible for us to vote in local and national elections without leaving home. Instead of marking a cross on a ballot paper, we could press our X on a keyboard or a screen, and at home, at work, or in the street. People already use the internet for shopping, banking, and GP appointments. Why not voting too? Do we still need the ballot box and the polling station? Remote digital voting would likely be a lot quicker. No travel, no queuing. For taxpayers, it would be cheaper too. No bills for premises or vote counters. Accordingly, according to the PA News Agency, the 2015 general election cost the government £115 million. Voting at home is already possible by applying for a postal vote. I understand that about a quarter of Winchester voters do that, but the procedure can be tedious and snail mail may not appeal to a younger generation. General election turnouts remain commendably high in the Winchester and East Hampshire constituencies, averaging well over 70%. But elsewhere in the UK, the proportion of citizens voting has slumped. Going back 100 years, UK percentage turnout at general elections was always in the 70s or 80s. But in 2001, it suddenly went down to 59.4%. It's hardly gone up since. Digital advocates think the decline could be reversed by remote digital voting. They hope going all digital would, crucially, encourage young people to vote. Youth is the sector that is voting least. At the 2019 general election, of people aged 18 to 24, only 47% voted, compared to 74% of people aged 65 plus. Excuse me. The many non-voters in the 18 to 24 groups are thought to be the citizens most likely to embrace remote digital voting. Perhaps polling stations repel some people. To them, the ballot box may seem old-fashioned, even outdated. Despite its attractions, I'm not sure that introducing remote digital voting would be good. For one thing, there's the cost. Advocates say digital would make elections cheaper. Cuts might include renting polling stations and paying people to count votes. But I fear changing to digital would cost heaps. Computer projects always get out of control. In 2013, the NHS had to abandon an IT scheme after the cost quadrupled to over £10 billion. And in digitising an Australian health payroll in 2010, the $1.2 billion bill was 200 times the original estimate. Digitising democracy risks eroding public confidence. Hostile foreign states could hack the system and change the result without detection. Security experts say ballot papers are more resilient. Officials can see ballot papers, but if the voting is over the internet and the counting is in a computer, it's difficult to witnesses to see whether elections are fair. Votes are always being cast digitally in a few countries, but within polling stations, tiny Estonia is the only country where votes have been digitally cast away from the polling stations. There, half the votes in 2023 elections were cast from people's computers or phones via a secure web portal. I suggest we forego remote digital voting. Let's keep the ballot box. And once all of life's other interactions are digitalised, a cross on a slip of paper will acquire a special status that young or old few will want to miss out on. Election day is the one time we see our democracy in action, helping us value our freedom and remembering how our forefathers fought for the right to vote. The walk to vote should stay a community ritual. Prodding your keypad or screen would be a poor substitute for inscribing your X in a polling booth. And that was from George Hayter, who said, do we still need the ballot box?
Green Party look to add some pedal power. If you see a flash of green, it may be local campaigner Richard Needham whizzing around on his electric bike delivering poster boards around Winchester in the run-up to the local elections on May the 7th. He adapted his bike to carry up to 6 wooden boards at a time using recycled materials. The Green Party are standing candidates all across Winchester District. Nationally, the Greens are rising rapidly in the polls and now have some more members than the Conservatives and Lib Dems. Locally, there are currently 4 Greens on the City Council and 1 Green on Hampshire County Council, Kate Needham writes.
And now we go to an article called Harking Back.
And it's written by Emma Brennan. Did you used to have a treasured scrapbook? Emma Emma was a keen collector of magazine clippings that reflected her music taste during the 1980s. My preference for tangible items over virtual has been well documented in this column, so it will come as no surprise that among the many pieces of paper ephemera in my nostalgia collection are a couple of scrapbooks and an autograph address book. Nowadays, people are more likely to browse through images online and store them digitally via their mobile device. But there are still a few of us who enjoy the screen-free way to organise, store and relive old memories. In fact, in a world that has become almost entirely digitalised, tactile papercraft hobbies such as scrapbooking are beginning to regain popularity, although not in the same form as when we were younger. Scrapbooking today is an art form for which you can buy a whole range of specialist papers, stickers and images. Unsurprisingly, you can even buy digital images to download and print off yourself, combining both online and real worlds. Scrapbooks, as an affordable means of conserving and arranging personal and family history, can be traced back to the 15th century, when they were originally known as commonplace books. They contained facts and ideas relating to the individual's interests. They were in many ways the early incarnation of what people would nowadays call mood boards, which again you can put together digitally on social media sites such as Pinterest. In the 1940s, when my mum was a child, she remembers having very little in the way of toys or games, so making a scrapbook was a free creative activity. She told me, "I had a big scrapbook and I would cut out any pictures I could find in magazines to stick into it. Mum never bought any magazines, so I don't know where she got them from. But if I liked a picture, I would cut it out and stick it into the scrapbook with flour and water glue. Anything pretty such as flowers or big colour pictures of models." By the 1970s and 80s, when I was a youngster, empty scrapbooks were readily available, just waiting to be filled with all kinds of papery bits and pieces. In my case, this ranged from pictures of my favourite bands, clipped from the copies of the New Musical Express or Melody Maker, alongside ticket stubs or concert programmes. I still have scrapbooks containing pictures of my favourite bands at the time, The Alarm and Teardrop Explodes. My sister kept a scrapbook as she was preparing for her wedding. She wore my mum's wedding dress, so she included pictures of both of them wearing the same dress some 30 years apart. She also kept receipts, order of services and menus. As an avid cook and baker, my mum has a recipe scrapbook with handwritten recipes alongside magazine cuttings. Apart from providing a trip down memory lane, the contents of these scrapbooks also document the culture, fashions and tastes of the times and show how much things have changed, not least the price of everything. Another physical record in book form that seems to have gone out of fashion in the digital age is the autograph book. I had one, and I can recall asking my classmates to sign it when we left one school bound for another. I used to think this was a bit daft, really, but apparently that was their original purpose. From as early as the 15th century, they were exchanged among friends and colleagues to fill with personal messages, rhymes, and other memories. By the time I acquired one, it was also commonplace for people to try to secure signatures of famous people, ranging from actors to rock stars. Mum never had an autograph book because she never got a chance to meet anyone famous. In the 70s and 80s, my friends would take their autograph books along to gigs or football matches in the hope of meeting their heroes and acquiring their signatures. I was always a bit nervous of anyone who had met someone significant. But by the time I was old enough to meet my heroes, I'd moved past the autograph hunting phase. However, anyone who managed to bag a few of the most famous people of the day and who hung on to their autograph books could now get a handsome reward by selling them online. I recently saw one with 1970 footballers' autographs for sale on eBay for £700. These days, autograph books aren't a thing. Gone are the days when screaming youngsters would queue for hours at the theatre's stage doors, hoping to get a glimpse of their idol and persuade them to put pen to paper. Instead, they whip out their mobile phones and ask their idols to pose with them for a selfie. And they don't have to eagerly await Monday morning to show their classmates a signature in a book, as they can post their pictures instantly on social media. Personally, I miss the thrill of the chase and finding a gem for either of my books, but I'm glad I took the time to compile them when I did, because I can relive those memories whenever I choose to, whether I have Wi-Fi or not. And this includes a lovely photo of Emma holding a great big scrapbook out with the teardrop explodes pasted onto the front and back cover, and inside all sorts of cuttings from the time that she was watching and listening to them, and also a lovely little address book which doubled as an autograph book, and somebody has signed their autograph inside for her.
Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 1st of May at 05:32 and begins at 20:58. On Wednesday the 6th of May, it ends at 5 a.m. and begins at 21:04. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we continue with further items of general news. Jane.
And here we have Challenge in Search for Capybara. Marwell Zoo's CEO has spoken of the challenges faced by teams attempting to recover the missing capybara. The animal, named Samba, has been missing for more than a month after escaping from a temporary holding enclosure. Laura Reed, CEO of Marwell Zoo, said teams are still working to track down Samba but have not received any confirmed sightings in the past 48 hours. She said, "Over the last week since Samba disappeared, we have received a number of reported sightings of her from members of the public. Sadly, despite through follow-ups on these reports, none has yet resulted in a confirmed sighting of Samba. Most recently, a possible sighting was reported near Colden Common, but searches found no evidence, and zoo officials believe several reports could be cases of mistaken identity." Laura said, "We're still using thermal drone technology and camera traps in key areas where Samba is most likely to travel, particularly along waterways and dense vegetation. Unfortunately, two of our camera traps have been stolen, which is hampering our search. Anyone who believes they have seen Samba is asked to take a photo and send it to What Three Words or Google Maps location." And there's a lovely photo of Samba, the runaway capybara, when she was spotted near Twyford in Winchester.
Nearly 900 cyclists take to the street in family-friendly event. Nearly 900 cyclists took part in a mass ride. The 9th Cycle Winchester Mass Ride saw an estimated 877 people of all ages take to the streets of Winchester on Saturday, April 25th. In what organisers say is the largest turnout to date. Speaking to the crowd out gathered at Abbey Gardens, Emma Street, a volunteer with Cycle Winchester, said, "We're a small city, often cyclists are hidden down the back streets, and here we are en masse. I hope you're feeling really proud of yourselves." Riders met at different starting points around the city before converging at the Alfred statue and finishing in Abbey Gardens. The event was supported by Hampshire Constabulary and Winchester City Council. Emma Street thanked Councillor Martin Todd during her speech. She said, "Together, I think we are showing a vision of what Winchester could be. We're all about enabling regular folk to get about by bike. Cleaner air, less congestion, healthier and happier residents, and stronger communities." The route included a new Barton line option designed for younger and or less confident riders. Miss Street said, "Seeing those little legs pedalling was absolutely heartwarming." Families, seasoned cyclists and first-time riders all took part, with many saying the warm, car-free atmosphere made for a perfect day. Riders were cheered along by members of the public and volunteers with live music along the route. At Abbey Gardens, participants relaxed with cake and ice cream in the sunshine, while children took part in activities organised by Cycle Winchester. The Winchester-based charity project has raised more than £100,000 for Naomi and Jack's Place by selling donated bikes. Skaters from a local group helped marshal traffic along the route and were praised by organisers for their support. And there's a picture of a little family together with their bikes behind them. They had fun riding in the sun, it says.
Vintage buses to take over city. The streets of Winchester will once again be echoing to the sounds of a whole fleet of restored and preserved buses and coaches. The famous King Alfred Big Bus Day, organised by the Winchester-based charity Friends of King Alfred Buses, abbreviated as FOCAB, F-O-K-A-B, will take place on May the 4th, Bank Holiday Monday. Some 40 vehicles will be on show and many of them will be giving rides, all free of course, across a network made up from old routes that operated in and around the city in the 1950s and 1960s. The free bus services will be on the road from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. There are two main focuses on Broadway and at the St. Catherine's Park and Ride site, and a regular free shuttle will connect these locations throughout the day. The traditional departures of the old King Alfred buses will be from the time-honoured starting point facing King Alfred's statue in the Broadway, while the buses and coaches running to surrounding villages and towns will be starting from St. Catherine's, with an additional pick-up point in front of the Guildhall. With a wide range of vehicles to sample, the oldest from 1929, the newest from as recently as 2002, there will be something for all tastes, with short rides round the city, as well as longer runs to places like Stockbridge, Sutton Scotney, Alsford, Colden Common, Otterbourne and many others. It's all explained in a souvenir programme that can be bought at the FOCAB stall beside the Guildhall and around the departure points. It costs £15. Proceeds from sales of this brochure are the principal and vital source of finance for the day's activities. Buskett Yard, alongside the bus station, will again this year play host to the Enthusiasts' Bazaar, with a whole range of traders' stalls selling all kinds of transport-related products, including books and models. To add to the day, refreshments will be available too.
And here we have Woman is Gifted Wheelchair Thanks to Community Effort. A young woman who has been gifted a bespoke electric wheelchair thanks to a community effort. Bishop's Waltham Rotary Club received a request from a family for a donation towards the chair for their 20-year-old daughter, who has had complex medical needs since birth. Due to her conditions, she could no longer self-propel a chair and needed a bespoke electric wheelchair. The request moved the club to contact the Meon Valley Lions and other Rotary clubs in the area for help. Together with Southampton Magna Rotary, Hedge End Rotary and Meon Valley Lions, the full amount for the wheelchair was raised. The new chair, equipped with a Benoit light drive and a track wheel, allows Millie to move independently at speeds of up to 6 miles per hour. Her mum said that the chair has been completely life-changing for Millie. Previously, they had to lift Millie over every dropped curb on the way to the village. Now she can navigate over dropped curves and speed bumps. She can also take the wheelchair off-road onto gravel paths, grass and woodland paths. The family have thanked all the charities who so generously combined efforts to make Millie's life easier and more fulfilled. The clubs have said that they're available to assist other members of the community and encourage people to contact them for help via their websites. The Bishop's Waltham Rotary Club is also organising the summer fair, the dog show and the motorcade on Saturday, June the 13th. The day starts with a motorcade of classic and vintage cars and motorbikes who will drive up the high street and onto Hoe Road for 12:30 p.m. when the summer fair will commence. The fair will include live music in two areas, a fun dog show, a food and drink area, a children's area, and a grand raffle. And there will also be picnic areas, fun and games, and inflatables. And there's a delightful photo of Millie in her new chair. It's in Bishop's Waltham, and she's on the grass, obviously managing it herself. It's a very complex-looking chair. There's the wheelchair at the back, and then it projects out in front of her quite a long way, much, much deeper than the chair itself, with a wheel at the front that can clearly move up or down, and she is able to angle it from a knob at the side by herself.
Gran, 85, is all set to drive to Ukraine. A Hampshire grandmother has volunteered to drive emergency vehicles into Ukraine to provide relief for those in need. Hazel Still, 85, from King's Somborne, has reportedly become the oldest ever volunteer to join efforts to deliver ambulances and 4x4s to Ukraine amid the ongoing conflict. The vehicles provided by charity Driving Ukraine are crucial for evacuations as they deliver supplies and aid emergency personnel in getting wounded civilians across the line. Driving alongside her son, Duncan Still, the pair's determination illustrates the broader power of the volunteer-driven movement, which has completed over 57 convoys. In the latest mission, the organisation delivered 150 vehicles, including ambulances, fire engines, 4x4s and trucks. Hazel said, "It started because my son said that he was going to do this and wanted me to come along. It only takes 3 days to get out there, and it will give us time to catch up now that he has moved away. I thought it was a brilliant thing to do, and Ukraine deserves all the help it can get. We meet in Oxford tomorrow and start our drive to Ukraine." The organisation Driving Ukraine does these convoys regularly, and they're always very successful. It's a brilliant thing to do, and they need vehicles out there. The vehicles are used for all sorts of things, including getting wounded people back from the line. They do save lives. Your background plays a part in decisions you make later in life. My mother had a traumatic evacuation during the war, and as a result, she helped home refugees when she returned to England. We've all been imbued with this feeling. My son went to Bosnia on a volunteering trip after his degree and ended up staying there for several years. Luckily, we have enjoyed travelling and have trust and confidence in other people. The Stills ended up raising £7,000 between them, and thanks to generous donations from friends, family and community members. The fleet of drivers backing this cause includes people of all ages, from their early 20s to their 80s. Hazel, with her rich tapestry of personal motivation, says her work with the convoy runs deep. For around 20 years, Hazel has been a source of support for refugees and asylum seekers in her local community, and she has always closely followed efforts aiding Ukrainians arriving in the UK. At its core, the effort is a grassroots mission supported by over 600 volunteers who have fundraised, campaigned and united in delivery runs.
Garden party to raise funds for the young. A spring garden party will raise money to support vulnerable young people. The event, set to take place during Mental Health Week, is being organised by Richard Steele and Partners in support of Winchester Youth Counselling, WYC, a charity that provides free, long-term, one-to-one counselling for young people at risk of suicide. The garden party will be held at Chesil House on Friday, May the 15th, and is expected to raise at least £4,000 for the charity. Dr. Hannah Reedy, Chief Executive of Winchester Youth Counselling, said, "There are sadly so many vulnerable young people at risk of suicide who seek support from our counselling service. This year, WYC is projected to provide over 3,300 hours of one-to-one counselling, and local support from our incredible business partnerships is crucial in achieving this. We are incredibly grateful for the generous support we have received from Richard Steele and Partners as their chosen charity. The funeral directors are covering all costs associated with the event, including catering, bar services, venue hire, and staff time. This means every penny raised from ticket sales, the auction, and the raffle will go directly toward funding counselling services for young people. Alison Hickson, director at Richard Steele and Partners, said, "Sadly, as funeral directors, we are increasingly seeing families affected by young suicide. The pain and trauma from this are devastating, and anything we can do as a community to support our young people, we must. Young people today are living in uncertain times with the legacy of COVID and reduced services available to them. We are committed to supporting Winchester Youth Counselling and doing all we can to help prevent these tragic losses. We hope the Winchester community will join us at Chesil House for a spring garden party in support of the wonderful work Winchester Youth Counselling does for our young people. Auction prizes include two guest list tickets to Camp Bestival, a vineyard tour and wine tasting for eight at The Grange, Hampshire, and a premium overnight stay for two with breakfast at Winchester Voco Hotel and Spa. The auction will open for public bidding at 12 p.m. on Friday, May the 8th, and close during the event. The garden party will also feature a silent auction, bottle raffle, and a string quartet to welcome guests."
And here we have radio stations celebrating a hat trick national of awards. Winchester Radio is celebrating triple success after winning three national accolades in the National Hospital Radio Awards. The volunteer-run charity, which serves Winchester and the surrounding area, was recognised at the annual awards held in Bolton, which honour hospital, health and well-being radio stations across the UK. Anna O'Brien, chairman of the Winchester Radio, said, "We all do what we do at Winchester Radio because we want to help people and make a positive impact in our community, supporting people to stay connected, share what is happening locally, including support information for those who need it, entertain and lift people's spirits, and help reduce loneliness and social isolation. It is really appreciated that these national awards recognise and value the efforts of small charities such as Winchester Radio for doing good, and the tremendous amount of love and commitment that our entirely volunteer team put into delivering this charity service to the community every single day." Nigel Dallard received the Lifetime Achievement Award for nearly 40 years of service. Nigel has volunteered with Winchester Radio since 1987 and supported the Hospital Broadcasting Association and its 160 member stations nationally for 25 years. He currently volunteers as Charity Governance and Management and Licensing Specialist Advisor. A new award introduced this year saw Winchester Radio's Ron Venturi named Unsung Hero. Judges said, "From hands-on practical help to actual presenting, from raising money to reigning morale, Ron is an incredible person." The station also took home silver in the Best Speech Package category for its coverage of the hospice's Purple Night Walk fundraiser. Judges said this was a lovely listen. It had atmosphere, texture and personal stories from people young and old to whom the hospice really matters. It really demonstrated the importance of the hospice to the whole community and the willingness of people to come together and support it. It was also placed in the top 10 of the Best Special Event category for its coverage of Brother on the Bus, following John Seager Green from the Hospital of St Cross as he travelled the UK by bus to raise funds for charity. The station has delivered hospital radio to Royal Hampshire County Hospital patients since 1984, and since 2019 has broadcast more widely to older listeners across Winchester and the surrounding areas on 94.7 FM. A lovely photo of the three gentlemen receiving their award and looking very pleased with themselves.
The amazing people who pounded the streets of London. Thousands took on the challenge of the London Marathon, including some from Winchester District. Runners participated in the event on Sunday, April 26th, raising money for various charities. Claire May from Ropley completed the 26.2 mile route to support Samaritans, cheered on by Steve and Katie May, raising more than £4,500, with nearly £2,000 going directly to the Winchester branch. Vanessa Barrow from Swanmore also took part, raising funds for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance. The marathon saw a record 59,830 participants, finishing, setting up a new Guinness World Record for the largest number of finishers in a marathon, surpassing the previous record of 59,226 set at the New York City Marathon. In the elite race, Kenya's Sebastian Sawa made history by becoming the first person to break 2 hours in an official marathon, finishing in 1 hour, 59 minutes and 30 seconds to win the men's race and set a new world record. In the women's race, Ethiopian Tigst Aseva retained her London title in 2 hours and 15 minutes and 41 seconds, setting a new world women's only world record as she edged out Kenya's Helen Obiri and Joyceline Jepkoske in a remarkably fast race.
Solar farm is put forward. A major solar farm could be built on farmland in Hampshire after an application was submitted to the council. Conrad Energy Developments Limited is seeking early planning advice for a proposed solar panel site near the A31, covering land at Cakers Lane in East Weldham and Selborne Road in Selborne. The proposed development spans three separate parcels of farmland, totalling approximately 84.6 hectares within existing field boundaries. If approved, the site would have an export capacity of up to 49.9 megawatts. Plans indicate the three parcels would be linked via underground cabling, with the connection to the electricity grid proposed off Blanket Street in East Weldham. The proposal includes rows of solar panels, electrical equipment in container units, a new substation, underground cabling, internal access tracks, fencing with CCTV security, and new planting to support wildlife and landscape improvements. Subject to further site assessments, a full planning application is expected to be submitted in the first quarter of 2026. A public consultation will be published soon, giving local residents the chance to view the plans and share their views. More information is available on the South Downs National Park planning portal under reference 26/01388/ADJAUT.
And bus station campaign. A campaign has been launched to save a city's nearly 100-year-old bus station. Conservative politicians in Winchester are calling for the bus station to remain as part of the Central Winchester Regeneration Scheme, arguing that its closure would create chaos in the city centre. The redevelopment plan proposes replacing the current station with dispersed bus stops in neighbouring areas such as Silver Hill and the Broadway. Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of the Conservative group, said, "Residents have clearly told us they want a bus station. Closing the bus station without a clear, workable alternative risks creating chaos in our city centre. We need a transport plan that is practical, joined up and puts residents first, not one that removes vital infrastructure. Millions of taxpayers' money had already been spent on these plans with no meaningful progress in almost 7 years under this Liberal Democrat administration. It is a dereliction of duty." Conservative campaigners are urging the community to make their voices heard and press for a comprehensive and practical transport strategy, including a bus station, before any major infrastructure changes are made.
So Lucky Jones celebrates her 100th birthday. A woman who recently celebrated her 100th birthday says she feels so lucky to be surrounded by family. Joan Pape reached the milestone at Colton Cares Abbots Barton, Winchester, marking the occasion with a family party and later attendance at a recital by a string quartet. When asked about her secret to long life, she said, "It just happens. I'm so lucky to have a wonderful family around me." Born in 1926, Joan's earliest memories are attending Long Eaton Grammar School in Nottinghamshire and being in local youth and church groups. Having worked as a primary school teacher and lived most of her life in the town of Sundiacre on the Derbyshire-Nottinghamshire border, she eventually moved to Winchester in 2022. She has three sons, David, and twins John and James, four grandchildren and one great-grandchild. In early years, Joan enjoyed nature walks in the Yorkshire Dales and Peak District. She played the piano and shared a lifelong love of music with her husband, who was a violinist and orchestra conductor. She is one of seven centenarians currently living at Abbots Barton. The oldest resident is 106-year-old Betty Perry. Others include Daphne Hopewell, Chloe Tubbs, Marjorie Beaven, Ian Cave and Arthur Wilkinson. And there's a lovely picture of two carers with Joan Pape reaching the milestone at Colden Cares Abbots Barton. Looking very cheerful she is. And there's a cake on a table beside her.
Huge raids uncover £588,000 worth of cannabis. More than £500,000 worth of cannabis, along with £10,000 in cash and an imitation firearm, were seized in a county-wide operation which also uncovered suspected victims of human trafficking. Hampshire Constabulary seized more than £588,000 worth of cannabis plants following a month-long operation across the country. The targeted warrants unearthed six illegal cannabis grow sites in Farnborough, Aldershot and Southampton, with officers seizing an imitation firearm, over £10,000 worth of cash seized, 10 mobile phones, thousands of cannabis plants and processed cannabis ready for street supply. Car wash sites were also visited as part of the operation to crack down on illegal immigration, modern slavery and human trafficking offences. Specialist officers carried out a valuation of just one harvest, estimating the illegal grows to be worth more than £234,000. Activity took place throughout the month of March and early April, as the force participated in Operation Mill, a national operation targeting criminal networks involved in cannabis cultivation and money laundering. The early morning raids were executed following intelligence reports from the local community, with one property being identified after engineers attended the location to carry out routine work and noted a strong smell of cannabis. 10 people in total were arrested as part of the operation. 8 have now been charged, while 2 men were safeguarded as suspected victims of human trafficking. Detective Inspector Christian Reed Milligan, who led the coordinated operation, said, "These latest successes are a result of intricate and painstaking work by numerous teams across the force, and I would like to thank them for their efforts, which have paid off immensely." Executing warrants linked to cannabis cultivation is something our officers carry out regularly as part of our work to protect communities and target organised crime. By targeting cannabis cultivation, we're cutting the issue off at the source. Without activity like this, these plants would be harvested, processed and disseminated in our community, fueling criminality, antisocial behaviour and the appalling violence we see when drug gangs feud over territory. Cannabis farms are not victimless. They are often linked to other criminality, including serious violence, antisocial behaviour and the exploitation of vulnerable people who are frequently forced to live and work in unsafe and inhumane conditions. It's the information received from members of the public that informs our activity. I would like to encourage the community to continue to tell us what you know and raise the alarm when things don't seem right. With your support, we're ridding our community of illegal drugs and apprehending those fueling it.
and primary school celebrates donation of 50 new books. A primary school is celebrating a generous donation aimed at inspiring a lifelong love of reading. Itchen Abas Primary School has received 50 new books from the Professor Sir William Taylor Foundation as part of the National Year of Reading. The donation supports the recent research highlighting the need to encourage reading for pleasure, with studies showing that fewer than one in three young people now do so regularly. Rob Bogan, head teacher of Itchen Abas Primary School, said, "We are incredibly grateful for this wonderful addition to our library and look forward to seeing the children enjoy these new books. The books include a mix of fiction and non-fiction titles from well-known authors and illustrators and are intended to appeal to children of all ages. The foundation is supporting primary schools by enriching their libraries." And there's a lovely photograph of a group of very happy Itchen Abas children in their red Itchen Abas sweatshirts, all holding up the book that they've chosen, from quite young ones to obviously in the top class. And a lot of them are novels, and a lot of them are also delightful things like Everything You Know About Sharks Is Wrong, or The Diary of the Wimpy Kid, and Old Dog, Everything You Know About Dinosaurs Is Wrong. So it's a really lovely selection of books, and we'll encourage them to read.
Best Foot Forward for Heritage Shoemaker. And it's a picture of her manager, Sabrina, polishing a shoe outside Loke, which is her the shop. A heritage British shoemaker with more than 140 years of history has opened its doors in Winchester, with the new store's manager saying the family-run brand's personal touch is what sets it apart from factory floor to free in-store shoe shining. Loke, which has been manufacturing men's shoes since the 1880s, and holds a royal warrant as manufacturer of men's footwear to His Majesty the King, officially opened its latest shop in the square on Saturday, April 25th, in the former Rohan unit. The family-owned brand, which already has stores in Salisbury, Portsmouth and London, is known for its Goodyear welted Oxfords, brogues, boots and loafers, alongside more casual trainers and boat shoes, as well as accessories such as bags, belts, wallets and shoe care products. Winchester store manager Sabrina Galdiero, who is originally from Naples but has been living in the UK for the past decade, said the city felt like a natural fit for Loke's store. "It's the perfect location. There is so much light shining in, it's absolutely delightful. I have a degree in fashion design and have always had a passion for menswear. There is a nice history behind it. I really got to know the brand in Portsmouth and I just connected with it. I have a passion for storytelling and Loke is all about heritage. It's a 140-year-old family-run business. To bring it to Winchester, a cathedral city with a breadth of history, just aligns with Loke. The brand is all about history and the factory has been in the same place since 1880. Ms. Galdiero said the company's sense of family and its focus on personal service runs through every part of the business, from its Northampton factory to the shop floor. "We are really proud of our staff. They are our family," she said. "Even in our factory, there are actual families working side by side. And it is more than just that. You can be proud of your work. When you deliver a product you have worked hard on, it's like your baby. We're a real family." Within the first 2 hours of opening, Ms. Galdiero said the response from both shoppers and neighbouring businesses had been really strong. "Not just from customers, but even the other shops have been really nice to us," she said. "There is a real village feel." As well as its core shoe range, the Winchester shop offers a repair service to resole Loke footwear, extending the life of its Goodyear welted styles, along with a free in-store polish and shine, something Ms. Galdiero says underlines the brand's emphasis on care and craft rather than quick sales. Accessories include weekend bags, belts, wallets and shoe care products are also on display, while lightweight loafers and casual trainers are designed to be flexible and durable.
Road Safety Partnership, a new partnership is driving forward efforts to make roads safer for everyone. Southern Water has joined forces with BREAK, the road safety charity, as an associated partner to support public awareness campaigns and promote key initiatives such as Road Safety Week. Ross Morlock, CEO of BREAK, said, "We are delighted to welcome Southern Water as an associated partner. As an organisation with a large operational vehicle fleet, Southern Water has a great opportunity to spread awareness about road safety far and wide. This partnership demonstrates the firm's deep commitment to protecting its drivers, other road users and communities. Southern Water has pledged funding for the charity for the next year and will share road safety messages with employees as part of the collaboration. The partnership aims to further engage Southern Water's workforce in safe driving practices and support wider efforts to reduce incidents on UK roads."
And Nautical Inspired Cafe reflects on successful first few months. A cafe in Hampshire reflected on its opening success after 3 months of business. A nautical inspired cafe, the Crow's Nest, recently opened in Wickham and has seen an increase in customers after receiving positive feedback from visitors. Currently employing 8 members of staff, including 3 young chefs, the cafe runs from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. and offers a variety of breakfast and lunch options, ranging from classic English breakfasts to loaded waffles and milkshakes. General Manager Nikki Stokes, 40, from Wickham, said, "It has been an exciting new adventure, and it's good that we get to put our own stamp on it. It's nice that the world is getting out now. People recommend it to others, and the weekends are getting really busy. The main thing is that the customers leave happy, and it can only get better. One weekend we were turning people away because we were completely full. I think once people know us and the word spreads, it will help. We're always looking for ways to improve, and customer feedback is really important. The space seats 60 inside and also has a terrace that customers can enjoy as the warmer weather approaches. And the Crow's Nest is dog friendly and will soon be baking their goods in-house." And there's a picture of the lovely building of the Crow's Nest and the two people who are running it. And also a table with a what looks possibly like a delicious breakfast or brunch on it, with sausages and baked beans and egg and toast and bacon and mushroom, and a delicious looking mug of coffee with a biscuit.
Assisted dying row. Supporters have criticised the selfish and undemocratic decision to block a vote on assisted dying legislation. Campaigners from Winchester travelled to London to join the Parliamentary Square demonstration on Wednesday, April 22nd, in support of the Assisted Dying Bill, which was halted by a small group of peers who talked it out in the House of Lords. Louise Papworth, leader of the Winchester Dignity and Dying Group, said, "I feel sure the bill would have passed if it had not been destroyed by the selfish and undemocratic behaviour of a handful of peers who talked it out. We'll not give up the campaign. This is what the public want, a humane and safeguarded choice at the end of life." The bill, supported by 75% of the public and Winchester MP Danny Chambers, was blocked without a formal vote in the Lords.
Jamboree Fundraising Concert. A fundraising concert will support scouts attending the 26th World Scout Jamboree in Poland. The concert on Saturday, May the 9th, will feature 5 talented scouts performing alongside the Mountbatten School Saxy Brass Band. The event will take place at the Lantern Theatre, Mountbatten School, Romsey. The World Scout Jamboree, themed Bravely, aims to inspire young people to take bold actions for the future of the planet. The 5 scouts, who also perform with the Saxy Brass Band, are working hard to raise funds for this once-in-a-lifetime trip. People are encouraged to support the scouts and enjoy a fantastic evening of music. A spokesperson said, "Join us for a fun, energetic fundraising concert featuring 5 incredibly talented scouts performing alongside the Mountbatten School Saxy Brass Band. It is set to be an uplifting evening full of great music and community spirit."
and students supporting charities in competition. Pupils are making a difference through a programme designed to inspire social responsibility and community action. Year 9 students at the Westgate School in Winchester took part in the First Give programme, which encourages young people to engage with social issues and support charities through research, fundraising and volunteering. Pupils began by researching issues in their community and identifying charities working to address them. They then invited charity representatives into the school to learn more about their work and discuss ways they could help. The groups went on to organise social action activities such as fundraising, awareness campaigns and volunteering. Each class selected a charity to support and prepared creative presentations, including a showcase in the school hall where Year 6 pupils were invited to listen to their pitches and vote for their favourites. A short list of finalist teams then pitched in front of their entire year group during a special assembly. Mrs. Fivey Ray, associate senior leader and organiser in the First Give programme at the Westgate School, said, "I'm incredibly proud of all the hard work of the Year 9 pupils have put into their presentation and the support they receive from their tutors and from their chosen charities."
Care company named the best. A care management company has been named the best in the region for its person-centred approach. Affinity Care Management, which operates care homes across Dorset, Hampshire and Surrey, was awarded the title of Best Tailored Care Management Solutions Company in Southern England at the 2026 Social Care Awards. Chris Byellen, founder and CEO, said, "We're thrilled to be recognised as the leaders in tailored care management for the region. This award belongs to our dedicated staff and management teams in our Dorset and Hampshire homes who work tirelessly to ensure that every resident receives care as unique as they are." The company manages several care homes, including Old Alsford Cottage and Allenbrook Nursing Home in Hampshire. Affinity Care Management was praised for its highly individualised management strategies designed for elderly care, dementia support and specialist nursing. Its approach focuses on bespoke management models rather than standardised corporate frameworks, aiming to improve quality of life across its Dorset and Hampshire facilities. The award also strengthens Affinity's reputation in compliant staff development and resident-focused innovation. The company has pledged to continue supporting communities across Dorset and Hampshire.
Nominations for staff awards. A call for nominations has been launched to recognise healthcare workers going above and beyond. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, is inviting patients, families, colleagues and community members to submit nominations for the 2026 Hampshire Hospitals People Awards, which celebrate the dedicated individuals and teams who go above and beyond in delivering care. Sue Harriman, Chief Executive of HHFT, said, "The Hampshire Hospitals People Awards are a real celebration of the compassion, skill and dedication shown by our colleagues and teams every single day. The stories behind each nomination are always incredibly powerful and help us to shine a light on the impact they have on patients, families and one another every day. If someone at Hampshire Hospitals has made a positive difference to you or your loved ones, I would really encourage you to take a few moments to nominate them. The awards are funded by Hampshire Hospitals Charity, which supports patients, staff and volunteers across the Trust. 8 award categories are open for nomination, recognising excellence in areas such as patient care, innovation, leadership and lifelong contribution. Nominations are open until Monday, June the 1st, hampshirehospitals.nhs.uk/peopleawards, and that's all one word.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts, and to copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers. And it's goodbye from Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
Carolyn Hewan.
Goodbye.
And Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And from me, Steve Russell, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.